The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to October 1995.
I'm your host, Edmund DeWint, and today we have a lot of the regular panel with us. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Pleasure to have you here, as always. On his right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Professor Kathy Bush.
Greetings, Edwin.
Greetings, Kathy. And on Kathy's right, from the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur Beer.
Hi, Edwin.
And on Arthur's right, from the Department of English and the sometime Director of Women's Studies, Professor Claire Crabtree.
Erstwhile, Edwin.
Oh, erstwhile. Oh.
What does that mean?
Sunt foarte fericit. I'm very happy to be here in Romanian.
Oh, how nice. Yeah. By the time this year is over with, we'll know five words in Romanian.
That's... Well, the rest of us are happy
you
to
already
be here
do.
In delirium.
Sunt means is or are.
Really?
Arf. That's Latin.
Just like Latin.
Just like Latin, yeah. And on Claire's right, my left, from the Department of English also, Professor Hugh Kulick.
Happy to be here.
Happy to
have
you.
As opposed to elsewhere.
Elsewhere, yes. Well, all right.
Should we list the places? We're both so glad we don't have to be.
We're glad we're not at a departmental meeting. We're glad we're not. Well, wait,
never mind.
Stop there.
Okay. There's just a lot of places.
Lots of places.
Most of the questions
that
you hear
are
in
even
this
worse
program
than
are sent in by our listeners. If you stump the panel, you will receive the winner's package, which will consist of a photograph eventually. But in the meantime, will consist of a diploma from the university.
Oh, awesome.
And if you don't stump the panel, you get attacked with a man with a rifle sitting on top of the phone booth.
Just
out there.
Fixing the phone.
Yes.
With a hammer.
With a hammer.
He's two stories up on a pole.
Yes.
Kathy, slamming doors.
Kathy, don't yell jump. That's not his.
Okay. This is not a Hitchcock movie.
Look out for that squirrel.
We may get a picture of him. Who knows? You know, but you'll get something if you don't stump the panel.
Should we tell people about our photographic attempt last week?
We should mention this.
Because, you know,
we did. We actually.
Yeah, it's not like we neglect this.
No, we went out and we got the lights turned on in the studio. We took something like 30 photographs and then discovered later on that the film had been loaded incorrectly in the camera, and so it didn't advance.
Now, and, you know, I think we should lay the blame for this at someone's doorstep. Mm. And I can think of
in
no
the Catholic
one
tradition
who is in no position to defend themselves right now, better than Melissa Sandluck, our new producer, who does set a certain standard for organization.
She was clicking the camera.
She took the pictures, so I think we ought to blame her.
That's right.
But did she put
the
film in?
I loaded the camera.
Yeah.
Oh,
let
her off. The truth is out.
We could have
no
blamed
excuse.
Her, and you,
no
you
excuse.
Took her.
No, no, no. We can't do that. We can't.
Sure, we
she's
can.
Behind the glass booth, so she can't
so
do anything except turn us off.
So we're doing it
run
again today,
backwards.
And I brought three cameras just in
two
case.
Without battery.
Only one
no.
of which we've discovered
right.
doesn't work
well,
so far.
One does not work, and the battery is dead in it. But, you know, that's life. Anyway, we also like to begin the program with a question from the producer.
Oh,
our producer, right. Melissa Sandluck, has decided that it's appropriate that the producer ask a question on a regular basis of the panel. So
no prizes,
I am
though.
Turning this over to Professor Crabtree to read the professor's question.
Please don't correct my pronunciation, folks. I'm doing the best I can. Il se faut vivre pour manger. Il faut manger pour vivre.
A little more slowly. A little more slowly.
Who said that?
Wait, a little more
who's,
slowly.
All right, what does it mean? You want me to repeat it?
Yeah, a little
more. Il se faut vivre pour manger.
Was it ICI?
I'm trying to visualize this.
Il se faut vivre pour manger. Il faut manger pour vivre.
Do you live to eat or do you eat to live?
Right. Who said that?
ARA.
It's necessary to.
ARA.
Don't we have new services?
Yeah, it's necessary.
So, Hope Chidoko or something like that. The Auschwitz.
Well, let's see. Who would have said that?
Well, it's not Roseanne because we know what
no.
the answer is.
Right. Is it one of those famous French chefs?
It was Karen Carpenter.
Don't think
chef. Oh, you.
Don't think
evil.
Chef.
Think general.
I am. You're
is
right.
it,
statistics.
Let's see. Is it someone French?
Yes.
There you go, Hugh.
Oui.
Good, Hugh.
Oh.
Good.
Think 17th century.
C'est un homme intelligent.
Right first letter. In your area.
M.
Yeah.
Molière.
There we go.
There you go.
Really?
Oh.
Molière said that? Mm-hmm. I never would have known that.
Okay. You keep doing translations.
Capability to elicit correct
and
answers
here
from
here comes the producer.
Il ne faut.
Oh, it's all right.
Thank you.
Does that look like it is?
It is not necessary. Oh, il nuffo. Oh. It is not necessary. Oh.
I knew it was wrong, but I felt I should read it.
But to eat to live.
Well, you know, I would say that's the second major mistake our producer has made in 2 weeks. You know? I think we're really
great.
You know?
We should point out that that our producer, Melissa, is probably the last living French major in this entire university.
Also, and that she's a wonderful producer.
She is. She's
that's
terrific.
The only reason we can abuse her.
She's a good tutor, too.
Yep.
But she wears funny T-shirts.
And we owe it to our producer, in fact. Our first set of questions, our first stack of questions, comes to us from the fourth grade class at Pleasant Lake School, Walled Lake Consolidated Schools, Mrs. Majney's fourth grade class.
Oh, great. Okay.
Cool.
These are questions set in by the members of that class. These are questions that are just things they've always wanted to know about.
Uh-huh.
They don't supply answers.
They just want to know.
Sky's the limit.
They trust us.
Okay. All these questions
are great. And what we are going to do, I am going to read excerpts from these sheets from as many of these students' questions as I can on today's program. And then the questions we don't use, we will use at a later date, probably at one of our stops on our world tour.
Oh, good, yeah.
All right, the first question from this class is from Ashley Bondi. Why does the moon follow my mom's car at night?
Isn't that great?
What
that
a great
question as a child.
Good question.
Down Lake Huron when you were when you were going. That's yes. Mm-hmm. What a good question.
Do we have an answer?
Well, it likes her mom's car, I suppose.
There, that's
well, that's a good answer. Yeah.
And it might be that it's just so far away that could be, have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you move, you're not moving that far in comparison to it.
It's also very big around.
Yeah.
Yes.
She can do anything, Ashley.
Yeah, I think that's the true answer.
So don't get her mad.
That's
right.
Want something else following the car? No.
Mm-hmm. Her next question is, I think it's Ashley is probably a girl. Yes. You never know these days, you know. I mean, you know, a boy named Sue.
My cousin's daughter's named Madison.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was
middle name is Wisconsin, no doubt.
Oh.
Why are there so many different languages?
Wow.
That's something that, like, if she was in college, there's, like, linguistics programs where you could study that for years and years and years.
And still not know the answer.
Not reached an answer on that one.
Yeah. Well, there's a story in the Bible.
That's
about the Tower of Babel,
that's
where people were starting to all speak the same language, and God got mad at them. No, he did.
Wait,
he
they
said they're trying to become like us.
Yes. Yeah.
And we'll show them. And he split them up. He knocked that tower down, and he split them up and made them speak different tongues so they would have trouble understanding each other.
People who believe in the Old Testament can't support the United Nations? Is that...
No, the United Nations speaks many languages.
Oh, that's right.
It's very biblical. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I knew a child who was raised in a multilingual family.
Mm-hmm.
The father was French and the mother was Dutch, I believe, mm-hmm. and they both spoke each other's languages. Mm-hmm. But to their relatives, some of whom lived in the home, spoke their own language. And there was a third major language as well. I can't remember what it was. Maybe they had servants or something. They spoke the local language.
Mm-hmm. But of course.
The child concluded that everyone had their own language. So when he came downstairs at the age of 7, they told him he was now a big boy. He was speaking his own language. And they had to explain to him that he had to get rid of him.
Oh, that's great.
He made up his own. Well, twins
that's
are supposed
lovely.
To sometimes be later to speak, but they will make up their own language between the two of you. So probably the most direct answer to the question would just be that people cultures developed in isolated parts of the world, and people evolved different sounds.
Yeah, people,
before there was television.
But
people
almost every
groups that developed languages, and the groups weren't necessarily in contact with each other.
But for example, mama is not universal, but the D sound and the M sound that are easy to, among the easiest for babies, will usually figure in.
Mm-hmm.
Mother
importantly in those words, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we got Dadaist from, right? It was this
side. Cool. And her third question. We'll move on to another set in a moment. We'll save the rest of her questions for later. Why, when I'm in bed at night, is Japan awake?
Oh,
because it's on the other side of the world.
Facing the sun.
That's right.
The world's going around.
Because we are moving around.
We've turned our backs.
Not the other way around.
No, we've turned our backs on the
sun. Ashley, you have a really great mind. I hope you write or something someday.
I think so.
She must have a good teacher.
Nice. And maybe I should tell Ashley, last year I was 7 hours away. I was in Eastern Europe. But that's not going to help to explain it. But anyway, when I made phone calls, I had to count back to find out what time.
Were you 7 hours ahead of us?
Ahead. And when I would forget whether it was ahead or behind, I tried to get a picture of the Earth turning and the sun.
That's right.
But in fact,
right,
to tell you the truth, I pictured the sun moving because it was easier for me.
I know. It always has been, hasn't it?
Sort of understand.
The trials of dyslexia.
If you fly west, you fly into the sunset. Mm-hmm. And so I imagined, anyway, it helped me.
The next set of questions comes from Chris Munson of the same class, and he wants to know, why do some stingrays jump out of the water and land on their bellies?
Oh, I didn't know they did.
I bet he knows why. And isn't
I bet
telling
he does. I bet
that
he does.
I didn't know they did that.
I have heard that whales jump out of the water, sometimes for fun, but sometimes like to knock off barnacles, and sometimes to get different parasites off them. And I wonder...
Well, the whales do it. They dip and dive for fun, as far as I can see. I've watched whales do that.
We're told at SeaWorld, when we saw this happen, that they do it to frighten fish. That's a reflex.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
Yeah, they do it in order... In other words, they feed on certain things that stay on the bottom unless there's an explosive noise, which causes them to...
flip those tails and dive back
Survival.
Down.
Survival.
Well, maybe Chris has been to SeaWorld and is checking us out.
Well, but it's stingrays he wants to know.
Yeah, and we're not helping. Yeah. We don't, gosh.
Well, we'll call Shamu up, Chris.
Well, my own theory is they're trying to even out their tan.
There you go.
I think that makes sense, actually.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, okay.
They don't want to have that fish belly white color.
It's so ugly.
But it says they land on their bellies, doesn't it?
That's what I
say. I mean, that's how you would want to land, isn't it? With your dorsal side.
I would hope so.
Your dorsal side. Down.
Most fish don't. Yeah. They land. I thought you meant they landed belly up.
No.
Land on their bellies.
Oh, then my answer doesn't count.
Oh, well.
No. I thought you meant they landed belly up.
Land on their bellies.
Yeah. Well, because fish just don't land on their bellies. Come on, Chris.
I think it was in a Life magazine.
They know better. They're like cats. Yeah. Land on all 4 feet.
There was a Life magazine, I think it was Life magazine lately, that had animals at play.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pictures of animals doing things that the only reason you could account for it was that they were playing. And there were wonderful pictures of a polar bear sort of rolling around and playing with a dog. And, of course, it didn't end with the polar bear eating the dog. So I think we could argue that there's something besides lunch going on.
Yes.
So it's fun.
Well, good.
I paid $7 for that National Geographic in Budapest to bring back to Romania because it was so great. And people just loved it. People took turns borrowing it.
Well, let's take a little break here.
You're listening to an encore presentation of a classic episode of Ask the Professor from October 1995. Matt Mayo and the current panel of professors will return in September with more brand new episodes. So send your questions today to atp@udmercy.edu.
We're back. Yes. All right. And we will move on, save more of Chris Munson's questions for another occasion. And we move on to Kazuki Onishi, who says, why do people talk differently in different states? The dialect.
You know, like states like intoxication.
There we go.
Matrimony.
That's going to be your answer.
Maybe it is a sense of isolation again, what we were talking about before. Like people in the thumb of Michigan.
Yes, they're very isolated.
Also ethnic sources.
Yes, true enough.
The dialect of Pittsburgh is a weird blend of Hungarian and West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The area my grandparents are from, they were all Scots that moved up there. And really, if you weren't Scottish, they basically didn't want you around.
Thank you.
And those people have their own little accent still in the northeast part of Michigan.
What about climate? You think you talk slower in the south because you're so relaxed, because you're not shivering with cold?
Well,
I'm not convinced they do talk more slowly.
I know.
Yeah.
Auctioneers, think, listen yeah. to a tobacco auctioneer and tell me they talk slow.
Or even in their
However,
folk
I can certainly say that northern dialects tend to be more nasal, and I think mm-hmm. it has something yeah. to do with sinus trouble. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Oh, that could
okay.
be. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's like I remember hearing many, many years ago, a person on the CBC was interviewing a conductor. Well, it was Haitink when he was still conductor of the Concertgebouw, and he was talking about, you know, he said, you... the Dutch language, and this poor announcer and this from Montreal said, I've always maintained that Dutch isn't a language at all. It's a throat disease.
That is what
so
all
what
of the other Scandinavians say about Danish.
Really?
Yeah, Norwegians and Swedes and Finns, that's one of their favorite jokes. Danish is not a language, it's a throat disease.
That's wonderful. And well, we'll save Kazuki Onishi's other questions for another program and move right on to Bobby Rothberg.
Okay.
Rothberg or Rotsberg.
Okay.
R-A-T-H-S-B-U-R-G. Rotsberg. If I'm mangling okay. these names, I'm sorry. But this is right up Hugh's alley.
Okay.
Why do hunters kill deer besides to eat them?
Well, that is a great question because, you know, really, hunters don't kill animals to eat them. That it's really kind of like, and you'll have to be careful where you say this, but it's kind of like a religious ceremony because it happens in the autumn when all the trees are dying, and you have to do some things to sort of show that there's a cycle of life and that things are going to come back. And so that's why deer hunting really doesn't have too much to do with food or anything. It's a
Can I
ritual.
Add to Hugh's answer?
Yes.
It's so they don't run into the side of your two-week-old car, like what happened to me. And I've always told Hugh I would pay him to put a contract out on the deer. That's a bad. And I can tell you that, again, in the Thumb of Michigan, they estimate they lost almost $5 million in crops from the deer nibbling at sugar beets mm-hmm. and beans mm-hmm. and things that way. So they're destructive little beggars, dear. Mm-hmm. That's why.
There is an overpopulation problem.
And there's always the factor of bloodlust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's not leave that one out.
Although what's sort of interesting was the deer had almost disappeared from Michigan early in the 1900s. And there was a real attempt to bring it back because people knew that there were getting to be more and more cities and less woods. Mm-hmm. And they thought that this might be sort of a good way to remind people of how things used to be. And yes. that was one of the things they talked about when they started hunting laws and stuff.
I'm
like
sure
that.
There's no shortage now. Yeah. They're everywhere. They're like packs of them. It's like West Side Story in the Thumb, okay?
Yeah, some of those.
I want them to wear jackets and have names.
Oh, Bobby's next question is, who invented standard and metric measurements?
Ooh.
Ooh.
The French. During the French Revolution, the metric system was invented. Is that
hey, it's Danny.
Right.
Dan should know. Hey,
mathematics Dan Maggio has just joined us.
We're talking about measurement, Daniel, dear.
Who invented the standard and metric systems of measurement?
Was the metric system invented by the French?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've established
time of the
that.
Revolution.
Got that.
But no.
But who did the foot yard business?
Well, I know that the foot is based on the length of the king's
foot. Yeah.
Based on the length of the king's foot.
Yeah.
And a cubit was always from your elbow to the tip of your finger. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of probably a biblical origin.
Cubit goes all the way back to
that's ancient Israel.
Yeah, but they came up with it because of the variation. Yeah. So that there was a standard.
I think what we call standard measurements is simply a result of the British Empire and the impact on American civilization of English culture.
You're the medievalist.
Because standard measurements.
It's not standard,
you know, are not
else.
Standing anywhere else. Yeah. That's right.
But didn't they use yard in Britain in the
Middle
Ages?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah. They use miles and inches and feet.
All the way hectares? Back to Edward, at
Did
least.
Did they use hectares?
No, that's French. Hectares is French.
Acres is the...
Yeah, acres is the English. And, of course, in the Middle Ages, what makes it worse is all those measurements were what they call customary. So an acre wasn't a statute acre today. It was what anybody called an acre.
Not
so
only
you
that,
can have villages side by side that have units of land that are 10 acres, and those 10-acre units are vastly different in size.
The other thing, of course, is that the reason we needed the metric system was because the, quote, standard didn't interlock with each other. I mean, you've got all kinds of things that you can't translate into each other, yards and rods and fathoms.
That's right.
Furlongs.
That's right.
Furlongs.
Furlongs, yeah. Okay, well, hang on, Bobby, for our next time we come back to your questions. Now we have Namir Kaji. Hmm. Who wants to know, why is temperature a part of metric measurement? Kind of sticking with the metric theme here.
Oh, that's great. They're learning metric.
She's absolutely right. There's no reason to change to a metric system because you don't do – it's not plotted against something else. So there's no rational system except that physicists use this thing called the Kelvin scale that – is where you can measure what's the coldest anything
absolute
can get.
Zero, yeah. Yeah.
And if you get that cold, everything disappears. And so, so do you. You go down to Grand Canyon or something.
Almost a few times, George.
Yeah, the whole world goes to Florida.
Pretty close to yeah. everything.
Yeah, the answer may be involved with just those blasted Frenchmen during the Revolution. Mm. You know, they were obsessed with metricizing everything.
Well, they were certainly interested in how cold you could get.
Mm-hmm. There is a relationship, though, isn't there? I mean, metals change sizes depending on temperature.
Yeah, but it's not like you have two different scales out there that you need to relate.
Namir also wants to know, who invented television?
The Russians.
There's a name.
Sorry, honey, but it's the truth.
The American inventor is credited as being DeForest, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But then there's this guy in England, too, that, I mean, the first TV
broadcast. And is there a Russian earlier than that?
The Russians always claim somebody. I have no idea who it is.
Yeah. There's
Marx,
a Brit,
I think.
Earlier. Yeah. I don't know.
You've stumped us. Stumped us on that.
But you got one name. What's the American?
DeForest. Yeah.
And do we have answers to that?
Did he benefit from this at all?
No, they just want to know.
Good questions.
These are fourth graders.
I want to know, did DeForest benefit from his invention?
It's so blue.
I don't
know. If a tree falls in DeForest.
If a tree falls on DeForest.
Yeah.
Does NBC reap the profits?
There was just an interview with the guy who invented the ATM.
Oh.
Did some of you hear that on NPR?
No.
Well, he said he hadn't become a millionaire, but that he and his wife had raised their 12 children pretty comfortably. So he didn't. We didn't
get
exactly
a lot of money out of the bank quickly.
He was waiting online, and he just thought, this is nuts. The teller is just cashing checks, and it's really very simple. Mm-hmm. And he said he carried a cardboard version of an ATM around for 2 years, trying to talk people into it.
Oh,
so
gosh.
It was really quite fun.
Next questions come from Jillian Manzagol, Manzagol, who wants to know, why do people grow?
I've always worried about eggplants myself. I mean, people don't bother me. When I look at an eggplant and I see it getting bigger, I think, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of it's in the genes, and some of it's in the nutrition. Yeah. And that's the story.
Thank you, George.
That's the truth. You can tell George was a dad. There you go. Let's move on.
But I guess the pituitary.
I remember from some ninth grade biology class, there was something, what was it called, neoteny or something like that, where the idea was that, especially for people, that they're so dependent on their brains that they really, if they were born as mature as most animals, I suppose it would make for an entirely different kind of uterus or something.
That's whatever.
But anyways, take that wherever it leads.
No, that's true.
Also, I mean, there's a practical reason if we can tell her. Is it a her this time?
Jillian? Yeah.
Jillian, yes. We can tell her that if her daddy was as small as she is, he couldn't get the cereal down from the top shelf for her.
There you go.
She also wants to know, why do some words sound like what they aren't?
Like they aren't.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's assuming that some words sound like what they are, like
they
hiss.
Do.
Yes.
Yeah. For a serpent.
Onomatopoeia.
Right.
Well, if it's English, dear, there's no explanation. Melissa told a great story today about Father Recasey with the Duff Nuts. He asked people back to come stay after church and have coffee and Duff Nuts because when he learned English, learns like rough and I mean,
O-U-G-H was
Duff Nuts. Yeah, I mean, so honey, that's why.
Okay. Now we really spell donuts D-O-N-U-T-S
a lot
of the time.
Yeah.
I'm a believer that we should simplify spelling.
Yeah, me too.
But Pete, when people
accept misspelling too, I think.
I agree. When people say, I know that, you would accept that. I have a lot of trouble with that.
Well, it's only what? In this last century that people have become obsessed with spelling, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the problems
in the 18th century, there were variant spellings in the same letter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, people would write a letter and they'd give variant spellings of the same word.
My court rolls or wills that I use.
Oh, yeah,
which are much bigger.
Names.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking Thomas Jefferson and Madison.
Yes.
Abigail Adams.
They weren't.
Shakespeare signed his own name several different ways.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Which proves there was more than one.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. See, that's
but one argument about that is that it makes it so hard to learn to read. So that it works against the kids that are just not, that don't find reading as easy. It's doubly hard. Except maybe these kids have had this experience. Now they don't require spelling for the first 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. In most schools, kids are not.
It certainly was one of the fundamental, you know, consequences of the printing press. Yeah. The still standardizing
mm-hmm.
the language and spelling and everything.
I might keep K and well. Uh-huh. No is the uh-huh. worst problem. It's one of the worst problems.
What about two?
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. there's a justification for the different spellings, for the different
for
uses.
All of them. Oh, yeah.
Because they come from their roots.
Mm. Yeah, but this argument that we have to keep the Anglo-Saxon character of our language, why?
No, you just have to...
Just read Beowulf once a year.
Just
well, no, you've
it.
Lost the Anglo-Saxon yeah. character.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the
yeah.
Anglo-Saxon character allowed variant spelling.
That's yeah. right. Good point.
But you have to have
and
clarity.
It also pronounces
or commonality.
R-O-U-G-A-F.
I mean, that age.
We don't do it anymore.
Well, I'd like another Dofna.
So what do you think?
Okay.
We should all go to Unamunda, don't you think?
To where?
Unamunda, that universal
oh,
language.
Right. What a great place.
What
switch
a great
to Unamunda.
Oh, no!
Well, hang on, kids. We're going to get back to these in our next program. In the meantime, we're also going to use them, the ones we haven't been using so far, on another live on-the-road program.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't go away. On our next program, we'll continue with these wonderful questions from the fourth grade class at Pleasant Lake School, Wall Lake Consolidated School, Mrs. Majney's class. And I want to thank the panel today, Professor Pickering, Professor
sure.
Bush,
bye-bye.
Professor Maggio, Professor Beer,
yeah.
Professor Crabtree,
yes.
Professor Kulik, and now this word...
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu, tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor, or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM, or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Oh, Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Smith Media Center on the University of Detroit Mercy Big Campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Melissa Samluck. Our technical director is Michael Jason. Executive producer is Vivian Dix. And until next week, this is your host, Edwin DeWitt.
And we're back next week with another edition of Ask the Professor. So please plan to join us.